by studying the universe, even for 5,000 years, one cannot gain insight even into Hashem's speaking abilities. We know nothing of God's oratory skills through examining the universe. We know nothing about His creative power. What do you mean you have a magnificent, splendorous, awesome, outstanding, extraordinary world containing myriads of layers of energy and matter from the subatomic quantum level all the way till the most base, to the outer levels of our universe, the macro level? True. But this does not reflect Hashem's ability of creation. His ability of creation is to create infinity. That He can speak infinite words. And our finite world, operating within the framework of time and space, does not reflect even a minuscule of Hashem's identity as a speaker. Alter Rebbe elsewhere explains the meaning in the famous words of the Gemara interpreting the pasuk in the Rayamim, Lecha Hashem Agdula. To You, Hashem, we attribute greatness, largeness, magnitude. So the Gemara, Hagdula Zumai Sibirachis. What are we referring to when we say Lecha Hashem Agdula? We are referring to the creation of the world, my Sibirachis. Take a look at the cosmos and you'll see what greatness means, what awesomeness means. But then there's another Gemara at the end of Masechta Megillah, quoted in chapter 4 of Tanya. In the space where you find Hashem's greatness, there you find His humbleness and humility. Zagdal Terebe, for Hashem to produce the awesome thing we call the world, He has to humiliate Himself. The very Gedula, this very big world, is for Hashem Anava. It entails a process of humiliating, of humbling Himself, as He is not even expressing here His capacity as a creator. In Likutei Torah, and Alter Rebbe's monumental work on Chumash, Likutei Torah, in Parshas Acharei Mos, he employs and uses a fabulous term in Zohar, in Parshas Balois, Chazak de Zohar, Lav Urche de Malke Le Shtoye B'Mila de Hadiyota. It is not the ordinary manner of a king to verbalize and utter words of a peasant. It's unbefitting for a king to speak that way. So the Alter Rebbe employs this Zoharic term in defining the Asara Ma'amaris, the 10 utterances through which Hashem created the world. Imagine you go listen to a lecture of a world famous speaker who's known for his extraordinary eloquence. He opens his mouth and he begins using vulgar language. This is Mila D'Hadyoite. It's unbefitting his regal personality, his regal, aristocratic, royal style of speech. Zagdal Terebe, the 10 utterances are Mila D'Hadyoite. Let there be a sky, let there be grass, let there be luminaries that don't express Hashem's natural speaking patterns. For Hashem, this is a brute form of communication. It's a crude form of communication. Aseres Hadibris. Now we're talking. Chassidus says, Aseres Hadibris. This is on caliber of Hashem. Zagdis Fasemis. In this week's Parsha in Va'era, or next week's Parsha, Parsha's Boy, that the 10 plagues, the 10 Makos, descended upon the world in order to transform the 10 utterances into the 10 commandments. In order that the Asara Marmaris should be able to be metamorphosized into Asara Sadibris, there had to be the element of the 10 Makos to first crush the ego of the universe. And in Kabbalah and Chassidus, the parallels between the 10 utterances, the 10 plagues, and the 10 commandments are discussed at length, but it's beyond our present discussion. But this is just the beginning, that the energy expended in creating the world is insignificant and virtually non-existent in the overall capacity of Hashem to create. Because that capacity is an infinite capacity and it does not get expressed in our world, which is a finite world. But now we go to step two. In the first level, in the first stage, the quantity, so to speak, the quantity of the energy, of the divine energy expended in creating our world is minuscule. In His infinite capacity to create, the energy expended in the creation of our world is valueless. But the very concept of speaking, of creating worlds, is obviously meaningful in that realm. But now we travel upward to the next level. Hashem is not just a speaker, He's also a thinker, so to speak. And when the uttered word creating the universe is evaluated in the presence of Hashem's thought, its virtual non-existence is even more striking. The Alter Rebbe expresses himself in Likutei Torah and Shir HaShirim. Zog the Alter Rebbe, Loi zehu ikir ha'alikus masha olam es mishavi mimenu. The primary aspect of godliness does not consist of the fact that the worlds are created by it. Since when are we to define Hashem as a speaker, as a creator? This is not who He is. He does it. But it's a very small part. In fact, it's an inconsequential part of who He is. I might be a speaker, but if my mother were to cease to call me by my name, and instead start calling me speaker, hey speaker, come over here. Hey speaker, can you do a favor for me? Hey speaker, good night. It would be insensitive, it would be untrue. The fact that I speak, that I communicate to others, is not the exclusive definition of my identity. It would be tragic if that would be the case. I'm a human being. A human being who speaks, I'm not a speaker. So why are we doing this to Hashem? Who is Hashem? A creator of a universe. It's like saying, who are you? You're a speaker. Of course Hashem speaks, He creates the world. But to identify Him exclusively as such is not the real thing. His entire existence doesn't consist of the fact that He communicates to others. He also communicates to Himself. And Chassidus explains what that means. There are different types of communications that transcend creation of the world. We're unfamiliar with them, but they're much more subtle. They're internal levels of communication. They transcend the element of creating the world. That's one type of communication. That's brute communication. That's speech communication. So in the presence of a thought, the word that creates the world is a non-event. Just as in our parable, the articulation of a thought within the form of a word is of no relevance in the presence of the thought. No one is going to ask his friend, hey, you were thinking about this all night, turning in bed all night, thinking about it. How many words did that thought contain? It's irrelevant how many words it contained. It may be there, but it's insignificant, as though it wasn't. The same is true concerning Hashem's word in the presence of His own thought. So in the first level, the nothingness of the word was due to its limitation. That defined its nothingness. On this level, the very form of creation defined as speech is meaningless. It adds nothing to the existence of the divine thought that produces this divine word. But then we go on to the third level. In the presence of Hashem's thought, the form of creation defined as speech is a non-event. It's meaningless. But the very concept of communication, which means the very concept of creation, has value. That is what thought is all about. It's a whole other type of creation. It's a whole other type of communication and so forth. But the very element of creation has significance. But now we must examine the value of the spoken word that creates the universe in the presence of Hashem's intimate self, so to speak. The place in Him which transcends communication, which transcends letters and words. Because Hashem is not just a speaker, but He's also not just a thinker, He's a feeler. Even to define a human being exclusively as a communicator would be unjust. A person is not just about communication, not even just about thought communication. A real person has an inner life. Hashem is not just about communication. Hashem also is. Now, in the presence of the feeling, I love you, does the spelling of the word love possess a meaningful identity? It might be there, but it's meaningless, as though it was non-existent. So in the presence of Hashem's transcendent self, there might be a word that brought all of the universes into being, a word that sustains and creates all of the universes constantly, but in the presence of the emotion, it has no reality, no being. It's nameless, it has no presence. It adds nothing. One does not even make mention of it. This component is totally drowned and submerged within the presence of its emotional progenitor. It's not just that the particular form of creation expressed in speech is irrelevant, as is the relationship of the word to the realm of thought. But more, ve'ein tzarech loimar. The whole concept of communication, of creation, is a non-event when it is in the presence of the intimate self of Hashem. The whole element of creation is meaningless. In the presence of the very He, of His essence, the whole concept of communication has no identity. Now here is the catch. In the case of us humans, the spoken word leaves our intimate chamber of emotions and it travels into the realm of thought. As Dr. Rebbe describes it here, you feel or you understand, you think. Then it leaves our chamber of thought, going out to the big world outside of us through speech. So true, being in the intimacy of our hearts, in the intimacy of our minds, the word was submerged and nullified within their presence. But then these words grow wings and they fly away and they become independent, assuming an independent status and identity. But in our case, however, the Alter Rebbe will continue in chapter 21, Hashem's intimate self fills every centimeter of space and every millisecond in time. Leis asar ponimine, in the Zoharic term, there is no space, physical or conceptual, tangible or intangible, material or spiritual, that is devoid of Him. So even after creation, the Word creating all of the worlds and sustaining all of the universes never left the inner chamber of Hashem. So in truth, there is nothing in existence but Hashem's intimate presence. Hu levadei hu mamish. Hashem is one alone right now, just as He was one alone prior to creation. Creation changed nothing. So in summation, the world is nothing but Hashem's speech. But the speech itself in the presence of Hashem's intimacy has no name, has no identity, is virtually non-existent. And just as prior to creation, reality was defined as Hashem, that was the definition of reality. So now to post-creation, the definition of reality remains the same. Hashem, that is reality. Just as He's alone prior to creation, He's alone post-creation. Reality remains the intimate presence of Hashem, and creation has not changed that even a bit. But the story doesn't end here. Everybody understands that if the story would end here, Mashiach would be here long ago. and there would be no need to learn in Tanya what the true definition of reality is. There is a second side to this picture, as the Alter Rebbe will explain in chapter 21, in the conclusion of the chapter. Due to a process known as Tzimtzum, a very intense series of concealments and contractions that take place, Hashem allows his speech to be perceived by the creatures being created by it, as though it was indeed human speech, in the sense that it left the inner chamber of the speaker after he spoke it. So even if we creatures perceive the divine speech as the core of all reality, we still view the cosmos as possessing an identity. We still view the world as something. So now, here, at the end of chapter 20, we come to realize step 2, in addition to step A, discussed in the beginning of the chapter. In today's class, we discover something new about the truth of Hashem's unity, in addition to what we explained last week at length. In other words, in Chassidus, there's a two-step program in which man experiences cosmic unity, Achdus Hashem, the unity of Hashem. And the first step is discussed in the beginning of chapter 20, which we dealt with last week. And the second step is discussed at the end of chapter 20, which we learned today, and in the continuation in chapter 21. And in the Hasidic discourses of the Alter Rebbe, this two-step program is defined as Yichud Tata and Yichud Ilah. The lower level of unity and the higher level of unity. Tata in Aramaic means lower. Ilah in Aramaic means higher. Yichud means oneness, unity. There is the lower level of the perception of unity and the higher perception of unity. And this is based on Zohar. The Zohar in Parashas Bereishis writes, Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis, that Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, embodies the truth of Yichud Ilah, the higher level of unity, and Baruch Shem Kvayd Malchus Eloi Lamvad encapsulates the doctrine of Yichud Tata, the lower level of unity. So basically, we have here a tale of two unities. Yichud Tata means the perception of Hashem's unity that is born as a result of man becoming aware of the divine word creating the universes continuously, something from nothing. When I become aware, when we become aware of this divine creative energy, this divine word, this divine dibur speech that brings the worlds into existence constantly, something from nothing, we come to realize that the world has no existence independent of the divine energy bringing it into being at every moment. In the parable we discussed last week, it's similar to characters in a novel who have no existence independent of the stroke of the pen of their author. Or the characters envisioned by me in my daydream have no being or reality distinct and outside of my imagination, as we discussed at length last week. So the world has no reality independent, detached. It has no reality save the divine word, the divine energy creating it. But as an embodiment of the divine word, it has a reality. Yichudei law, the higher level of unity, is when man becomes aware not only of the divine word creating the universes, but he also becomes aware of the source, of the origin of the divine word. when he doesn't only view the world relative to the divine creative energy creating the world, but he also views the divine creative energy relative to the speaker that produces the word. And then he realizes that the speech itself is in the presence of Hashem's intimate self. And in that presence, it has no identity. So the entire universe and all of the universes, in truth, have no identity whatsoever, save the intimate identity of Hashem Himself. The whole Word, which creates the worlds, is submerged and nullified in the all-pervading presence of Hashem's inner reality. So in this level of perception, there is no world. In Yichud Tata, the world doesn't have an ego, but it has an identity. It doesn't have an egotistical identity, but it has a godly identity. In this level of perception, in the lower level of unity, the world doesn't have an identity outside of the godliness, but as an embodiment of the godly energy creating it, there is a huge world. But in Yichud Deilah, it's not just the world doesn't have an ego, there's no world. I don't literally mean there's no world. Bereishis bara lekim es hashamayim v'haaretz. Hashem created the world. It's not an illusion. Even in the level of Yichud Deilah, there's a world. But it's as though there's no world. The world doesn't have a name. The world doesn't have an identity. There's nothing to talk about. Because in Yichud Deilah, you come to discover the relationship of the word to its source. So you see that the whole word which creates the worlds and gives it identity is submerged in the intimate reality of Hashem. So thus the whole world doesn't have an identity. Yichud Tata, the lower level of unity, is the realization that self-actualization is achieved through self-transcendence. Yichud Tata is the moment when I come to realize, to discover that my true self, that our true self, is the Dvar Hashem, the divine word. But in Yichud Deilah, there's no self. In Yichud Tata, there's a self. What's the definition of the self? Transcendence. In Yichud Deilah, there's no self. In Yichud Tata, I become aware of Hashem as He constitutes the essence of creation. I become aware of the dimension of Hashem as He constitutes the truth of my identity. In Yichud Tata, I find myself in Hashem. In Yichud Deilah, I lose myself in Hashem. In Yichud Tata, we discover ourselves within Hashem. We become aware of the fact that Hashem is our true essence. In Yichud Deilah, we recognize Hashem from His perspective. And from His perspective, even the word which creates us is Kaloi Chashiv. It's as though it's non-existent. In other words, in Yichud Tata, godliness is ultimately a tool for self-actualization. It's the only tool, it's the exclusive tool, it's the true tool, because we realize that there's no self outside of Hashem. But in Yichud Deilah, there's no need for self-actualization, because the whole self melts away in the all-pervading unity of Hashem. In Yichud Tata, there's ultimately an I. A sacred eye, a sublime eye, a celestial eye, a refined eye, but an I nonetheless. In Yichud Deilah, there's no I. So this is the tale of two unities in Chabad Chassidus, Yichud Tata and Yichud Deilah. A brisker bacher once defined, he was learning Chassidus for a while, and he understood it pretty well, and he defined it superbly. In the Brisker Schnitt, this is how he put it. He said, Yichud Tata is a din in Welt, and Yichud Deilah is a din, is an uptight in the Eberste, in the Meberste. Yichud Tata is an uptight, it's a din in the world. Yichud Tata is how the world perceives Hashem, and Yichud Deilah is how it is, how reality is perceived from Hashem's perspective. Not how reality is perceived from the world's perspective, but from Hashem's perspective. Yichud Tata is ultimately about us, and Yichud Deilah is about Hashem.
Very little relation, you cannot see.
Yeah.
The infinity of numbers from the comic.
Right. Let's talk about it in human relationships for a moment. In human relationships, it says in Chassidus, there's also Yichud Tata and Yichud Deilah. Again, this is a remote metaphor, but it's a metaphor. This is true about friends, true friends, about parents and children, and ultimately in the ultimate relationship between a husband and a wife. A relationship excludes ego. That's A. Both in Yechud HaTatan and Yechud HaElah, ego is out of the question. In the Alter Rebbe's world, ego was... ego is nothing to discuss. You didn't begin to scratch the surface of the surface if there's ego involved in your life. It's all about Yichud. It's all about Achdus. One of the greatest students of the Maggid, known as the Volpa. We don't even know his first name, or he's just known as the Volpa. He was one of the most extraordinary students of the Maggid, very, very close to the Alter Rebbe. In fact, they say that when the Maggid would say Chassidus, the only two that would remain conscious by the time he was finished was the Volpa and the Alter Rebbe. Reb Levi Yitzchak Baditshev, the Holy Baditshev, after 5 minutes, he was out. The Rebbe Reb Zusha, the Rebbe Reb Elimelech of Luzhensk, Reb Avraham Amalach, the Maggid's son, Reb Avraham of Kalisk. These Talmidim were... their spiritual stature is indescribable and fathomable. The gulf between the spiritual world and the physical world utterly didn't exist. And when the Maggid began Torah, the passion that existed at that moment electrified them and consumed them, that they could not review it or remember it. The only two that remained intact was the Volpa and the Alter Rebbe. The Volpa had an extraordinary mind that was more powerful than his heart. And Alter Rebbe, who, as we spoke at the conclusion of chapter 19, Alter Rebbe's whole one of Alter Rebbe's chief contributions to Yiddishkeit was about channeling the nuclear energy of the soul with infinite vessels. Chabad, Chochma bin Adas, is about taking the deepest transcendental truths and permeating the human finite dimension with them. So the Alter Rebbe personified that. So therefore, the deepest energies in the Alter Rebbe's experiences and writings never compromise on the vessels and never shatter the vessels. And his colleagues suspected him for compromising on the energy. Because if it can permeate the vessels, it means you compromise the energy. But the Alter Rebbe believed that the deeper, the real quintessential energies don't have to shatter the vessels. When you get in touch with the quintessence of energy, it permeates every dimension of existence. So in any case, the Alter Rebbe and the Volpa were the reviewers, the ones who reviewed the Maggid's Torah. Now once, after the Maggid finished saying Torah, they were looking for a place where to go to review it. So they went to the Volpa's home. Oh, the Volpa's home we can't even begin to describe. There was no roof. The roof was sunken, it was broken. It was mamish, a tiny room. No beds, no chairs. They sat on the floor. It was cold. And the Maggid just finished saying Torah. And all the Talmidim have been transported to the celestial world, so they couldn't even begin to review it. And Alter Rebbe went himself to the Volpa and they sat down. So the Volpa sighed, and he says to the Alter Rebbe, if I would have had a nicer home. And he didn't conclude his statement, which apparently he wanted to say, it would have been much geschmacker, and Alter Rebbe told him, a spiritual worm is eating up on you. That's what he told him. The Volpa became a neufel. He fell very, very deeply. From the greatest heights, he fell very, very low. He became an alcoholic. He became addicted to alcohol. And in his states of alcoholism and addictions, which is a terrible addiction as we know today, he was so brilliant that he can lay in the street as an alcoholic and talk chassidus. Talk the deepest truths of godliness. And he lost everything he had, and he became a poor man. He would go from door to door and collect money. Parenthetically, he once came to the Rav of Babroisk. Baruch Mardechai Atigna was the Rav of Babroisk. He was a Talmud of the Gaon of Vilna, who became a chassid of the Alter Rebbe. Baruch Mardukha, extraordinary scholar. And he knocked on the door. The Baruch Mardukhai opened the door and he sees a poor man asking for money. The Baruch Mardukhai, as great chassidim always had, very powerful intuitive instinct, or as they say in German, Spitzenfingergefühl, intuition. And he saw that this is an extraordinary person, and he began to see how he acts. He thought this is the Volpe. And no one has seen the Volpe for years. So when the Volpe sat down to eat something, he went into the hall and he opened up the Volpe's little sack that he was carrying with him. And the Volpe turned around and he sees him looking in his sack. He says, "What are you looking? Do you think I'm a ganev? Do you think I'm a thief?" He says, "No, I'll tell you the truth. I suspect that you're the Volpe, and I'm looking if you have some writings of the Maggid in your sack." So the Volpe turns to him, he says, "Baruch Mardukhai, in those days, by the Maggid, the Chassidim weren't like today's Chassidim." He says, "By you guys, the Rebbe, the Chassidim, and the Chassidus are three distinct realities. So you need the Chassidus to be transcribed on paper." He says, "By us, the Rebbe, the Chassidim, and the Chassidus was one singular entity. There was no need to write down the Chassidus." You know, you have to write something that you have to remember. Yeah, you don't have to write that you exist, right? You write errors. "I have to fix my car, I have to buy glasses, I have to fix my cellular phone." Yeah, that's what you write down, yeah? You don't write down... Huh? Sometimes some people have to write down breakfast or the menu for breakfast. No, but even breakfast you don't have to write down, but certainly you don't have to write down that I exist. So the Volpe is saying, "By you guys, the Rebbe, the Chassidim, three maises, three distinct realities." So the Rebbe says, "Chassidus, to incorporate it into your life, you have to write it down, you have to study it, learn it, meditate upon it." He says, "But yes, we didn't write anything. It became part of our identities." But that was the tragic, it was a tragic end of the Volpe. So the Alter Rebbe sensed it at that moment. Now obviously you're dealing with people in the stature of the Volpe and the Alter Rebbe, where even the slightest tinge of ego demonstrated to the Alter Rebbe that there was a compromise in the Volpe's real spirituality. But the very fact that he sat down, and in the moments after Chassidus of the Maggid, there was that sense of selfhood, and evaluating his home, and Chassidim say, "Ich volt gehat Hashem Erehem," there is an ich, there is an I, that demonstrated to Alter Rebbe that something happened. So when you're dealing with, we began saying, when you're dealing with ego, ego in the teachings of the Alter Rebbe don't begin to begin. They don't play any role in anyone who has a serious relationship to reality. But in Yichud, it's all about Yichud. It's all about egolessness. It's all about connecting. But in a relationship, there are two levels. So let's examine the human relationship, and then we'll go back to Hashem. Let's talk about the relationship between... the ultimate, between a husband and a wife. There is the Yichud Tata element and Yichud Ilah, as a remote metaphor again. A real relationship is connecting to the other person and realizing that you have to let go. A real relationship is about vulnerability. Ego is about protection. When we communicate with other people, it's just usually an ego involved, which means I position myself always vis-a-vis the other person, and I protect myself. And every word we say is usually protecting ourselves. Now, this sometimes is very subtle, but it's always that way, because we're threatened by other people. And this world is not a safe place at the moment. It's not a safe place for real vulnerability. People can be hurt and get hurt. So we have to play it safe. What's a real relationship? A real relationship is where you can be vulnerable, where you can let go of your guards, and you can melt away. You can cry, you can be really honest, you can be really vulnerable. And the celebration of a real relationship between a husband and a wife, the Alter Rebbe says, is the celebration of vulnerability. And there's no celebration deeper in the world than the celebration of vulnerability. That's when a person becomes complete, the only place where a person becomes complete. So one level of that relationship between a husband and a wife, and that's the beginning, is where you realize that it's not about ego. That there's much more to get out of life by being selfless. That your deepest self-realization as when you connect to another person. You become connected to the egoless part. Becoming connected to yourself means becoming connected to the vulnerable part of yourself. And becoming connected to the vulnerable part of yourself means introducing someone else into your life. So the deepest self-realization is by going beyond the protective self. So in that level of relationship, your ultimate self-realization is through the other person. Through connecting to the other person, through loving the other person, through helping the other person, through trusting the other person. But then there's a deeper level of relationship. A deeper level of relationship is where the relationship becomes about the other person. It's not about your self-realization through connecting with someone else, but it's where totally you transcend yourself and you're there for the other person. Can I say another anecdote? There was this Jew who would go into the bar every evening. He would come into the bar every evening and he would order 2 cups of Jack Daniels. And this tradition went on for years and years. So the bartender asks him, why the same menu? Why 2 cups of Jack Daniels? Never change, never any creativity, no originality, the same Isa. He says, I'll tell you the truth. I served in the Korean War with a very close friend of mine. And every evening, we were in the same platoon. And every evening, at the conclusion of the day, we went to the bar that was there in the army base. And we would have a drink. He would have a cup of Jack Daniels, and I would have a cup of Jack Daniels. And we would toast L'chaim with each other. Unfortunately, this friend was killed in the war. And I was so close to him, we were so connected, we were so friendly, I decided that I want to carry him in my heart forever. So as remembering our special relationship, I decided that every single night I'll go into the bar and drink 2 cups of Jack Daniels. One for me, and one for him. Okay. 10 years went by, 20 years went by, 30 years went by, and this Jew came in every evening religiously, 1 cup of Jack Daniels, another cup of Jack Daniels, and he left the bar. One night, he was already an old man. He comes into the bar and he orders 1 cup of Jack Daniels. The bartender gives it to him, and astonishingly, he says, "What happened?" He says, "I'll tell you the truth. I stopped drinking." This is a deeper type of relationship. This is where you begin experiencing the other person's perspective. They say a story about Rabbi Aryeh Levin. Rabbi Aryeh Levin was known as the Tzaddik of Yerushalayim. He passed away, I think, in 1969. His wife had a foot problem. She was suffering in her foot. So he once took her to the doctor. And he tells the doctor, "You know, doctor, my wife's foot is hurting us. Hurting us." It's a deeper level where you start, you transcend yourself so deeply, you go into the other person's world and you start appreciating that person's perspective. Now, you can't start a relationship that way, because you're totally strangers. It starts with you, Yichud Tata. Yichud Tata means you find yourself, but you don't find yourself in ego. You find yourself in egolessness. You find yourself in someone beyond yourself, in someone outside of yourself. That's Yichud Tata. But it's ultimately, you play the role here. It's a din in you. It's a din in you, if you want to put it in yeshivish language. It's a din in you. It's just that the real you is about, is when do you get in touch with the real you? When you go beyond the you. When can you really become complete within yourself? When you let go of your guards. When you relate to someone else. When you trust someone else. Yichud Eilah in a relationship means, it's not just about your self-realization. You become so connected to the other person that you start seeing reality from his or her perspective. You view reality from that person's intimate self. You assume the dimensions of the other person. You dawn on their, you embrace their lenses, their perception. You see the world and reality how they view it, and you're there for that person. You don't find yourself in that person, you lose yourself in that person. That's much deeper. And that's where the real, real relationship begins. That's where the boundaries are removed. Now in the Nimshel, In our relationship to reality, there's Yichud HaTata and Yichud HaIloh. Yichud HaTata is never about ego. It's about Hashem's Achdus. We come to realize that the self of the world is godliness. If you want to get in touch with the identity of the universe, a separate identity from godliness doesn't exist. The world is something from nothing. Its only reality is the godly identity that molds it and grants it character, design, and energy and vitality. So Yichud HaTata is a beginning to appreciate the rhythm of life. Beginning to appreciate that the true essence and nature of everything, the ultimate self-realization of you, is by transcending the self. Because a self divorced from the godly identity in it doesn't exist. That's not what the self is about. That's Yichud HaTata. Yichud HaIloh is a deeper level. In Yichud HaTata, it's about the self ultimately. But you come to realize that self-realization is through selflessness. Yichud HaIloh is viewing the world from inside out. Viewing the world from Hashem's perspective. Assuming the identity of Hashem's intimate self for a moment. And then, the world is not about the self being realized in a deeper way. From Yichud HaIloh, the whole Dibur has no tfisas makom. In Hashem's intimate self, what role does one word play? What role does one sentence play? What role does one paragraph play? There's a deeper ocean. There's an intimate reality of Hashem. That's what you're connecting with. And the one word might come from there. It does come from there. It evolved from there. But it doesn't have any erech. It has no value. It's utterly insignificant. It doesn't project and express that intimate self. You see? The Zohar writes that Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad is Yichud HaIloh. Baruch Shem Kvod Malchus Elohim Vod is Yichud HaTata. What does this mean? In Kabbalah, everything is in code language. So the Alter Rebbe explains this. Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad is the Jew attesting to the truth of Yichud HaIloh. That's when the Jew becomes connected to the intimate self of Hashem, where then the whole world takes on a new dimension. That's where the real Achdus of Hashem. It's not that there's no world as an independent reality. There's no world even as an expression of divine energy. Because you're in touch with Hashem's intimate self. That's Hashem Echad, the real oneness, where Hashem is the only significant reality. Then there's Baruch Shem Kvod Malchus Elohim Vod. Blessed is the name of the glory of His kingdom for all of eternity. Here you're talking about His projections. Glory, kingdom, eternity. And this is the story that when the Holy Rabbi Yisrael Rizhner was 9 years old, he met the Alter Rebbe. Some people say, I heard Shabbos that it was at the Zhlobene Chasana. The Zhlobene Chasana I told you about in the past was the Chasana where the Alter Rebbe's grandchild got married to Rebbe Yitzchak Baditcher's grandchild. And the Rizhner was there, he was 9 years old. And he met the Alter Rebbe. So he presented a question. Now the Ruzhiner was an extraordinary master and man of God. When he was a child, Taka, they say a story. We're talking about daydreams a lot lately. So the Ruzhiner would sit in cheder, and every question, they would learn Chumash, and every question that Rashi raised, the Ruzhiner already raised before they learned Rashi. And it was unbelievable. Everyone knew if Rashi asked the question, the Ruzhiner as a child is going to ask the question. So they were learning Parshas Vayetze. So the pasuk describes Yaakov's dream. Vayachalim, what's the lashon? Vehinei sulam mutzav arzav v'roshim magia shemaim vehinei malachi elikim olim v'yodim boy. He dreams about the ladder, which stands on the earth, but its top reaches heaven, and the angels of Hashem are ascending the ladder and descending on the ladder. The Ruzhiner remains silent. Now everyone knows Rashi's question, ascending and descending. Malachim first have to descend and then they can ascend. If the ladder was standing on earth and it reached heaven, and the Malachim are celestial heavenly beings, they don't go up and come down. They come down, they descend, and then they ascend. That's Rashi's question. And Rashi explains that there were two sets of Malachim. There were Malachi Chutz Laretz, right? Malachi Etz Yisrael, and so forth. But the Ruzhiner was silent. So the teacher turns to the Rishna, he says, "Nu." So the Rishna says, "Vas nukistu?" What's the nu? He says, "What about the question? Oilim v'yoidim, how can Malachim ascend before they descend?" The Rishna says, "What do you want? This is a dream. Afachalim is kinkashadish." On a dream, you don't ask questions, yeah? We know that even on a daydream, you don't ask questions. Even on a daydream, which we are in control of in today's day and age. But in the age of the Rishna, at least Afachalim is kinkashadish. So when he was 9 years old, he went into the Alter Rebbe. And he turns to the Alter Rebbe, he says, "Rebbe, once a Jew says, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, how can you say, Ve'ahavtas Hashem Elokecha? Once you say, Hashem Echad, how can you say, Ve'ahavtas, you should love God? In the level of relationship of Yichudi Law, is there a you who loves?" So the Alter Rebbe responded, because in middle we say, Baruch Shem Kved Malchus Yilel Ovat. And then you could say, Vahavta. Because Baruch Shem Kved Malchus Yilel Ovat is Yichud Tata. So the Gemara says in Pesachim, that from Hayin and Beis, the Mishnah says, Anshi Shisha Dvarim Asu, Anshi Yerichai. Three things, Michu B'yadam, three things, Loi Michu B'yadam. Three things the Chachamim protested, three things not. One of the things they didn't protest is Anshi Yericha Yu Kirchinus Shema. What does Kirchinus Shema mean? So one of the interpretations of the Gemara, I think the Shit of Rabbi Yehuda is Kirchinus Shema means Kirchin means they were Kirch. They connected Shema. They didn't say Baruch Shem. They connected Shema to Vahafta. So this explains that Anshi Yericha were on a much deeper level. They never came down to Baruch Shem Kved Malchus Yilel Ovat. Huh? It says in Chassidus, why do you need Yichud Ilah? If you have Yichud Tata without Yichud Ilah, you'll ultimately fall from Yichud Tata also. Let's talk about it in relationships. If your relationship with your wife is only about your self-realization, it's never about totally the other person, ultimately the relationship itself can't have eternity. Because if the self is involved, the ego will take over. If our whole relationship to reality is about Yichud Tata, which is ultimately about self-realization, even though there's no ego, but since you play a role there, so then ultimately the egotistical illusion can also overwhelm you. If there's no Yichud Ilah memory in Yichud Tata, if Baruch Shem is not recited silently to carry the legacy of Yichud Ilah, ultimately we'll lose Baruch Shem also. There has to be that altruistic dynamic in a relationship. If the relationship doesn't lead to the next step, where you become really selfless and you start caring about the other person because the other person, you start caring about your friend, your wife, your child because that other person's needs, not just because what I gain out of it. Really the other person. Where I stop drinking, but I'm still drinking because I have to drink for you. That might be called denial, but... But conceptually, then ultimately Yichud Tata will also fall. This is the message of the Alter Rebbe in Perek Chav. You see, that's why the preface of the words and the prefacing words of Perek Chav is Yichud Tata. That he took from Shara Yichud V'Amunah, explained at length. But the continuation of Perek Chav, the mashal of the relationship of the Dibur Lagabe, the intimate self of Hashem, that's the level of Yichud Ilah. And it's only when we introduce that level that we begin understanding the true nature of Achdus Hashem. The true nature of Achdus Hashem, not just that the world as an independent reality doesn't exist, but even the world as a dependent reality also doesn't exist. Have a wonderful week.
That is one.
This is Perek Chav. The question is, where do we stand now? We're outsiders. So we judge God from outside in.
What else do we have?
So
Perek Chav Aleph, he says that we're insiders.
That's what the Talmud
says. We're insiders.
Why?
And that's the whole Vard, why Torah mitzvahs, why every mitzvah is a part of Achdus Hashem. A mitzvah is about tuning in to this perception of reality. So a mitzvah is not just something Hashem commanded. A mitzvah means you're in touch with Hashem's unity.
Rabbi Jacobson delivers this weekly class on the Tanya at Heichal Menachem in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, New York. To order additional tapes or albums, please call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076.